Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the New Yorker Political Scene, where I break down what was discussed on this week's episode of the New Yorker's podcast, The Political Scene, with Evan Osnos, Jane Mayer, and Susan Glasser. That podcast came out on Friday of last week. I will give you one guess as to what they discussed.
At 4:20 p.m. on Thursday afternoon, in a Manhattan courtroom, the judge in Donald Trump's criminal trial received a note from 12 New Yorkers. It said, "We, the jury, have reached a verdict."
Of course. What else would they possibly be talking about besides the fact that Donald Trump was convicted on 34 counts, basically of falsifying documents? You already know the story. You know all the details. They've been hashed over and over and over for the last 3 or 4 days. Noteworthy there, the jury announced that they had the verdict at 4:20 p.m. 4:20.
My phone was blowing up, and I think it brought me to see yet again that Democrats are bedwetters. I mean, it was 10 seconds after the verdict, my phone started filling up with texts from people, a major fundraiser in the Democratic Party saying, "I'm afraid this is just going to allow more money to be raised by Trump." I then heard from a never-Trumper, former Republican, who's now a Democrat, who said, "I'm afraid there's going to be violence." I mean, they didn't give themselves 10 seconds to enjoy
reasonable
the verdict,
fears,
you know? But basically, I mean, they're sort of like an omerta went down in the Democratic side. Don't gloat, right? And I don't think gloating is the problem. I'd say self-flagellation is more of the problem among the Democrats that I was hearing from.
So in general, I guess I sort of agree with Jane Mayer here that Democrats are bedwetters and that self-flagellation does seem to be a problem in general, outside of the context of Donald Trump's legal troubles. I'm not so sure that it's a good idea for them to be like shouting this from the hilltops, in large part because Donald Trump is trying to basically say that this whole thing is politically motivated and that it's because of actions or decisions made by Joe Biden. I don't think that there's any indication that that's true, that it's directly true, that Joe Biden had a direct hand in deciding whether or not to charge this case or how it was prosecuted or the decisions that the judge made or the decision the jury made ultimately. None of that really has anything to do directly with Joe Biden. But there is such a thing as prosecutorial discretion, and prosecutors have political jobs by definition. They decide how to implement and enforce laws. Eli Honig, who's a former federal prosecutor and a state prosecutor in New Jersey, wrote an article this week in New York Magazine. The headline is, "Prosecutors Got Trump, But They Contorted the Law." Reading from Eli's article here, "The following are undeniable facts. The judge donated money, a tiny amount, $35, but in plain violation of a rule prohibiting New York judges from making political donations of any kind to a pro-Biden, anti-Trump political operation, including funds that the judge earmarked for, quote, resisting the Republican Party and Donald Trump's radical right-wing legacy. Would folks have been just fine with the judge staying on the case if he had donated a couple of bucks to re-elect Donald Trump MAGA forever? Absolutely not. District Attorney Alvin Bragg ran for office in an overwhelmingly Democratic county by touting his Trump-hunting prowess. He bizarrely and falsely boasted on the campaign trail, 'It is a fact that I have sued Trump over 100 times.' More importantly, the DA's charges against Trump push the outer boundaries of the law and due process. That's not on the jury. That's on the prosecutors who chose to bring the case and the judge who let it play out as it did." Skipping down a bit here, "The charges against Trump are obscure and nearly entirely unprecedented. In fact, no state prosecutor in New York or Wyoming or anywhere has ever charged federal election laws as a direct or predicate state crime against anyone for anything. None. Ever. Even putting aside the specifics of election law, the Manhattan DA itself almost never brings any case in which falsification of business records is the only charge." Standing alone, falsification charges would have been mere misdemeanors under New York law, which posed two problems for the DA. First, nobody cares about a misdemeanor, and it would be laughable to bring the first ever charges against a former president for a trifling offense that falls within the same technical criminal classification as shoplifting a Snapple and a bag of Cheetos from a bodega. Secondly, the statute of limitations on a misdemeanor, 2 years, likely has long expired on Trump's conduct, which dates to 2016 and 2017. So to inflate the charges up to the lowest level felony, class E on a scale of class A through E, and to electroshock them back to life within the longer felony statute of limitations, the DA alleged that the falsification of business records was committed, quote, with intent to commit another crime, end quote. Here, according to the prosecutors, the another crime is a New York State election law violation, which in turn incorporates three separate unlawful means federal campaign crimes, tax crimes, and falsification of still more documents. Inexcusably, the DA refused to specify what those unlawful means actually were, and the judge declined to force them to pony up until right before closing arguments. So much for the constitutional obligation to provide notice to the defendant of the accused against him in advance of trial. This, folks, is what indictments are for. So there you have it. A former federal prosecutor, Eli Honig, by no means of the MAGA right-wing ilk. In fact, he thinks there's credence to a lot of the other cases against Donald Trump, basically arguing in New York Magazine that there are politics involved in this decision to charge Trump with these crimes. Again, the prosecutor in this case was elected. That means the nature of his job itself is political. And whether you like it or not, Donald Trump and Republicans do have a point that an ordinary citizen would not have been charged with these crimes, and that the decision to do so was political. Jane Mayer also says there that Democrats gloating isn't really too big of an issue. In case you missed it, though, I will point you to one Hillary Clinton. So basically, within hours of the verdict being read, Hillary Clinton announced on social media she was selling a coffee mug with a very millennial-looking design of herself drinking out of a mug, and it says, "Turns out she was right about everything." This mug is still for sale for $22 in case you want to buy one for you or as a gift for someone else. And it says on her post, "You'll support Onward Together groups defending democracy and get a pretty great mug to sip tea from." So there you have it. Hillary Clinton once again finding a way to make it about her.
In the words of Senator Bob Corker, from the very beginning of the Trump presidency, I remember he told me this, Donald Trump is a human wrecking ball, and he will wreck anything that stands in his way. This is a very grave threat. It's a grave threat to his personal liberty as well as his political hopes. And I am very concerned about the damage that will now be done to what remained of the credibility of the idea of an independent legal
system.
But
I want to play. Susan Glasser there is making the point that this verdict and the backlash to it, in a sense, could continue to erode credibility of America's legal system. I'm just curious how much credibility she thinks America's legal system has at this point. The New Yorker political scene has been discussing as well over the last few weeks and months all these scandals about Supreme Court Justice Alito most recently, and before that, Thomas. We talked about it on last week's episode as well. I'm not sure how much more credibility America's legal system has damaged.
I was interested in the mutedness of Biden's response and in
the lack thereof.
Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, you got two Democratic senators from New York, one of whom is the majority leader in the Senate, Chuck Schumer. So what does Schumer say? Almost nothing. What he said was the verdict speaks for itself. That's the delusion that the Democrats have, that facts speak for themselves. In this information war, they do not speak for themselves. They need a megaphone, and they need champions, and they need someone to engage in pushing back against the disinformation. And sort of falling back and hoping reality seeps in is not an aggressive enough stance, I'm afraid. Does anybody really think that the right is going to say, oh, well, this is fair and square if they don't speak out? not, you know, this you can't buy them off by placating them. It's not.
I don't think anybody is imagining that this is about placating Trump's lunatic right-wing base. I think this is about imagining that there are people who are in play and that there are some people who are queasy about whether or not this process was on the level. And I think that the thinking is that they don't want to feed into that and do an own goal.
God help me. I am going to go ahead and agree here with Evan Osnos. Jane Mayer, I think, is basically saying that the Democrats need to be louder and more vocal and sort of take a victory lap for Donald Trump having been convicted. For all the reasons we've been discussing, I think that that's a double-edged sword for Democrats. They don't want to be seen as sort of having been in some way responsible for prosecuting Donald Trump on this case. I also think, it's going to piss a lot of people off. A lot of people don't necessarily want to spend all their time parsing out the details of the case. But what they can sort of sense is that they got Donald Trump on some low-hanging fruit. And perhaps these are sorts of crimes that a lot of wealthy and powerful people commit without getting prosecuted for. I think Evan Osnos probably has a point, though, that it's not worth Democrats sort of shouting this from the hilltops.
There was a very interesting comment made by Stephen Levitsky, who's a professor at Harvard who studies sort of the death of democracies. And what he said was different about what's going on now. He said, you know, there have been any number of politicians who've been convicted for any number of crimes and denounced the judges and the juries as unfair. What you have here is an entire party in lockstep saying the same thing. Incredible message discipline. They're all saying it. And that is a wall of disinformation coming at me. I mean, like a tidal wave of it.
One of the biggest pet peeves of mine in the Trump era has been the rise of this phenomenon of fact-checking things, especially fact-checking things or calling things disinformation when maybe they're people's opinions or people's analysis. Like in this case, people thinking that Donald Trump was sought after in like a political witch hunt. Well, as we've been discussing, there were politics that went into the decision to prosecute him. So I think it's in bad faith to sort of depict everyone who takes issue with this case and all of the Republicans who are defending Donald Trump by saying that they're putting out disinformation. Some people are saying that Joe Biden is somehow behind this prosecution, and I guess that is disinformation. But simply defending Donald Trump in this case and saying you don't think it was fair that this case was brought by the district attorney, I think that's a perfectly valid and legitimate thing to say, and I think it's crying wolf if every time someone has analysis you disagree with, you call it disinformation.
I do think I want to say one thing about the Robert De Niro appearance, which was I think it's a very smart idea to involve the two of the cops who were injured on January 6th. I think they are heroic, and I think that they turn the script upside down for conservatives who see themselves as law and order proponents. And there you've got these two guys that risk their lives to try to protect the country.
And, of course, you have a candidate who has been convicted. So
it doesn't make it harder to use that law and order slogan that Trump likes so much.
It doesn't, though. It doesn't make it harder to use the law and order slogan because accusing Donald Trump and his supporters of hypocrisy is not going to change their minds about this stuff. They've already decided that these two cops, Harry Dunn and Michael Fanone, who were defending the Capitol on January 6th are traitors or double agents or cucks or libs or whatever. You're not going to take away the talking point that Donald Trump is the candidate of law and order by pointing out, hey, here are these cops that responded to the riot on January 6th, and they're saying that Donald Trump is the bad guy and that they're the real true patriots who defend America. That the Trump supporters are just going to say, no, that's backwards, and you're a traitor, and you're a cuck, and you're a lib, and whatever. Like, how do you, in the year 2024, after 8 years of Donald Trump, imagine that pointing out hypocrisy in his position is somehow going to hurt his support?
in a way, I find a certain amount of, you know, optimism in seeing that the system held in this particular case. And, you know, that it is designed by the founding fathers to try to check and balance would-be dictators. And so far, it held in New York City, and we'll see what happens everywhere else. But it's going to be a rough ride, but this was a healthy sign.
Yeah, it is a day for accountability and for fact and for the rule of law. And I think it's important not to lose sight of that.
Thumbs up, America. We're going to be okay. You hear that? Yeah, the system held up, at least in New York. As I mentioned, there was a lot of discretion and judgment made that went into this case being prosecuted and that went into the amount of resources put into prosecuting this case and making sure that they got a conviction on these charges. A lot of those decisions are political decisions, so keep that in mind. Now, as far as the system working, I guess it is sort of, we have crossed a Rubicon now where a former president of the United States has been convicted of felonies. That is the first time that that's happened in U.S. history. I think that is a good thing. If you commit crimes, even if you are the president, you should probably be prosecuted and punished for those crimes. The real test is going to be if all of the crimes that all presidents commit with their power as president ever get prosecuted. If U.S. presidents actually do end up facing charges for things like war crimes or crimes against humanity, that would be a sight to behold. And I hope in my heart of hearts that I do see that day. Until then, this is Russ Finkelstein. Thanks for joining me.